Okay, it says that the goofball up here is supposed to qualify briefly. I'm Mike Stevens. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 29th, 1987. I'm one of those wackos that got miracled in here by a set of miracles, great and small, that all got in weird cosmic order on that day in late July 1987 and blasted me into a treatment center that night through no plan of my own. No, I wasn't forced to either. It just wasn't on my big-ass planning sheet. I was at the end of a 10-day run. I was a toxic waste dump. The last dog had died. The wheels came off, and I got miracled in here. And I've been with you wackos ever since. highly advise the Louisville Slugger method for getting here. If you can survive it, it kind of cuts down on analysis and high chair pounding and questioning and saying, "Don't tell me about God." Shit like that. It just saves you all that stuff, and you go where you're kicked. So, thanks for letting me share. Our speaker tonight, I am thrilled that she's here and going to share with us her story. About 6 months or so ago, Nina and I, for reasons I can't remember, ended up in a 10 a.m. meeting here one weekday. And we never go to those meetings, but both of us were here. And a young woman a couple of chairs away from me, who I had never seen, shared, and it just knocked both of us out. And so I cornered her after the meeting and pointed first to that tiny Sicilian that most of you know, assured her that I wasn't asking for her phone number for any reason other than to have it for a future speaker meeting, that was my wife, the big boss over there. And Jamie and I had a chat that morning, and a few months later, I took on these duties for the month, and she was the first call I made. She's quite a young lady, and I'm anxious for all of you to hear.
There are lots of you here tonight. My name is Jamie. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 1st, 2008. That was absolutely not planned. I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth tonight, so just know that this is all up to God, not up to me. Somebody told me a long time ago that I'm only responsible for the first part of what I just told you, and the rest is really up to Him. So I'm going to start at the basics. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. So I'm going to just read you very briefly. When I picked up this big book and I read this, I'm like, oh my God, that's me. It said, "We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. Uh-oh. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people." And that's what it used to be like before I got here. It's page 52, right in the middle of the page. You know, I never planned to be an alcoholic. My father was an alcoholic. My brother's an alcoholic. It wasn't something that I really aspired to do, but I was really, really good at it. I had my first drink at 17, and I drank alcoholically from the moment I picked up. It was after prom, and we were at the beach, and it was really fun, and so I got really wasted because I thought that's what you were supposed to do when you drank. I didn't know anything of this whole idea of normal drinking. It still doesn't make sense to me. I've been sober for a few 24 hours, and I don't understand the concept of just one or two. I think that's nonsense. You know, there should be 9,000, not nine. So anyway, although normal drinkers don't seem to drink nine at once either, but anyway, and so I was off and running, and I think my first hangover must have lasted at least a week. But I thought that was really cool and really fun, so I wanted to do it again. And in true alcoholic fashion, I moved to Europe. I got married. I married a serviceman. He was a captain in the Air Force. And I really, 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 really learned how to drink overseas. Every weekend, that was Friday, what you did. Actually, my boss had Heineken in his fridge in his office, and about 2, 3 o'clock every afternoon, he was like, hey, you know, let's have a few. So I got some pretty good training. I did a lot of pub crawls in my day. I was married at 19, and I moved back to the States when I was 22. I divorced my husband. I had an affair. There was nothing I did good as a drunk. So I cheated on my husband, which, you know, was his fault somehow, and because I couldn't possibly be responsible for that, right? The guy's fault. Anyway, bless his heart, poor guy, had to be married to me. So I came back to the States when I was 22, and I was always a really high achiever. I did very, very well in school. I come from a pretty reasonably decent family. My father did die when I was a little girl. I was 3 and a half when he passed away. But I was raised by a mother who, I can tell you to this day, loves me with all of her being, all of her soul. She would do anything and has done everything for me. If it wasn't for her, by the grace of God, I got the mother I did, I would be totally, or I'd be way worse than I am. Anyway, so thank God for that lady, which I can tell you when I got here was not my attitude about her. I wanted to kill her. I was like, can I cut that bitch now, please? And thankfully, you know, now I'm like, can I love her? How can I show her honor and respect? That's a miracle of the program. Some of you may not actually ever want to get there. That's okay. I never did either, but I got there anyway. Despite my best attempt to stay sick and despite my best attempt to stay twisted, I still managed to get in these rooms and get sober. So it can happen for all of us. Anyway, so I moved back from Europe when I was 22, and I don't remember my 20s. I also thought that was a cool thing to do. I got a job. I finished college, and my first job was training, and I would travel and drink and train, and I worked from home, dangerous job, so I could drink a lot, and I did. Then somehow I picked up some sort of like, oh, I should like maybe try to have a career, and so I did that, and I was promoted very quickly at 23. I was the director of client operations for a software company. I went back to school. I got a master's degree. I don't remember getting it. I don't know how I did it. Honestly, when I tell you I spent my 20s blacked out, I really, truly did. I was a mess. Personal relationships were a complete disaster. There was absolutely no redeeming quality that I had, other than I was persistent. And I didn't apply that skill very well, or in a positive direction, until I started to get sober, and I used my persistence and my stubbornness and my perseverance to fight for sobriety. I should really say to stand for sobriety, because I don't fight anything or anyone anymore. I just take a stand for myself, for sobriety, and for God's will in my life. But anyway, I was a mess. I have been through some very terrible things in my history. I've been raped 3 times. I was 14 the first time, I was 25 the second time, and I was 30 the third. The last 2 times were under the influence of alcohol. So I can say that when I drink, good things don't happen. There's nothing good that has come out of my alcoholism other than I qualify to be here, and that's a gift and it's a blessing. You know, the usual, right? Parties and running into fences and peeing beds, and I did all of that. I don't want to take a long time in a drunkalogue because we all have similar stories and similar feelings. You know, I drank because I was alcoholic. I could come up with 1,000 excuses why. I could tell you about my pain, and I could say it was because of this, and I hurt so much, and la, 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 la. And the bottom line is, at some point, I lost all reasonableness around drinking, and I just drank because it was what I did and it was who I'd become. I was very dark, very depressed. I was on antidepressants for several years. I drank through that time period as well, even though you're not supposed to. I did a lot of even though you're not supposed to. I was 28 years old in 2004. I had just graduated with my MBA, and I was partying with these guys. I always had this group of guys I hung with. They were hockey players. We drank a lot. And they were great because they bought me all this booze, you know, and so it was awesome. And I have no idea what I did in a blackout, right? So who knows what I could have done drugs. I have no idea. I just don't know what happened. But anyway, I took a look around the room of people I was drinking with, and at 28, I was like, oh my God, if I'm like this when I'm 30, I'll commit suicide. For some reason, I thought like turning 30 was this huge big deal, and if you're not there yet, it's really not a big deal, and you know, whatever. It's certainly better than turning 25. But anyway, yeah, so I was like, I'm going to get my life together. I made that resolve, right? And I think that started me on the road to recovery, even though it would be several years before I would actually come into these rooms and get sober. But I recognized that I had a problem and knew that I had to do something about it. I just didn't think it was alcohol. I thought it was, you know, other stuff. So I set out on this journey, and I started to go see counselors, which I'd been seeing since I was 8 years old, off and on anyway. And I started to go to seminars and workshops and personal development and personal growth stuff, and I changed my career, and I, you know, changed the people I was hanging out with, and I changed the things I did on the weekends, but I was still freaking crazy. Like, my drinking went from every single day, and this is why I had a really hard time believing or thinking I was alcoholic. I went from a daily party drinker, binger all the time to, you know, I kind of slowed it down a little bit. I would drink every weekend. You know, I kind of did the reverse, right? And it was like, oh, every weekend, and then it would come down, and it would be like every few weeks, and then it was like once a month, and then it was every so often. Never in control, though. I never had the ability really to drink one and put it down. And if I did drink one and put it down, I wanted 50 more, you know, so I would sit there and be like, so I couldn't drink properly. I definitely didn't drink like a lady. And I thought that was cool. I thought it was really cool that I could outdrink a lot of guys. It's not really that cool. So, anyway, beverage. Yeah. So, that was in late 2004. I got a job in late 2005 as a public speaker, and I knew that when I did that job, the people in the audience would pick up that I was a hot mess, and so I knew I couldn't drink, and that helped slow me down as well. It also set me on the path of personal development in terms of different CDs, and I started reading different books. You know, in the big book where it talks about we tried all these methods, like drinking beer only and, you know, whatever, we'd resign if we were ever drunk on the job, blah, 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 and it talks about inspirational books and exercise. Yeah, okay, well, I did that. And so that was cool, but it didn't really work. It didn't fix my crazy. I did start seeking God, even though I'd been raised in the church. I grew up in a Methodist church, and I just knew I wanted to be bad, so I didn't really bother going to church. I'm like, well, if I'm going to be bad and I want to, then why would I go to church? Because that's really hypocritical. So I guess I had some morals. I don't really know. Or at least I valued integrity, even though I didn't act with any. That's that part of the story. Anyway, so I'm on this job, and the clincher of all of this is getting a DUI, and I blew a .204. I was at a bachelorette party in Galena, Illinois. I'm a professional now. That's right. You can be proud of a 204. I see a couple people out there nodding, and I'm like, yeah, good thing. So I was at this bachelorette party that I didn't want to go to, and so I figured, well, why not drink? You know, I probably hadn't had a drink in about 6 months at this point, and so, you know, when it says, like, when we relapse, it gets worse, never better. All right, well, it was, like, that. Done. I mean, I was drunk in, like, half a drink. No question. I was not going to stop, and I was going to do the craziest things I could possibly come up with to do. Incidentally, that was also the night of my third rape. So it was a bad night. Bad night. DUI. Anyway. Got pulled over in the parking lot of my hotel. I was in a brownout. So I kind of remember it, but kind of not. I don't really remember getting arrested. I do remember the field sobriety test and being really proud of the number continuing to climb on the little meter thing. So, you know, it was cool to be a drunk. Anyway, that happened, and I called my cousin the next day. Thank you. And my cousin's an attorney in Atlanta, and I'm like, oh my God, Mark, what am I going to do? I got a DUI. And he's like, oh, no big deal. You're just going to jump through some hoops. And I'm like, oh, I can do hoops, no problem. I've been creating them and jumping through them my entire life. So I set about this path of rectifying the situation, and that was in June of 06 that I got the DUI. By October, I had to go to court, so I had to fly back up to Illinois, blah, blah, blah. I took care of all that, and they told me I had to go to DUI school. So I registered with the Florida Safety Council, where the Safety Council decided I had enough of a problem that I needed to go to treatment. Really? I was pretty hacked off about that. I thought, you know, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm perfectly fine. Thank you very much. And I was wrong. And fortunately, they caught me. And for me, I was really blessed to get caught. You know, I think sometimes some people's stories are so different, and they come in because they really wanted to, and they knew they had a problem, and yeah, that wasn't me. You know, I got caught, and I had dodged consequences my entire life. I think a lot of us are like this, where somehow we manage to get out of stuff, and like I don't know how we do it. We're like Houdini, and we just come out, you know, like unscathed of all these debacles. One time I ran into a fence. I wrecked my car. I wrecked the fence. I did the whole nine yards, and it was a total blackout. And I wake up the next day in my friend's house, like it wasn't even in my own house. And I got out of that one, right? Like the state troopers looking for my car. I'd moved it into the garage, you know. It was one of those nights where I'm like, what happened last night, you know? And nobody knows. And there was no recording device at the time, so it's a mystery to me. Most of my drinking experiences are a mystery to me. So I went to this treatment facility, and it's an outpatient group, and the counselor there is this old hippie who's got long gray hair like down to the middle of his back, and I tried my damnedest to give him a hissy fit and a temper tantrum and the manipulative, like, you know, like that. Because that seemed to keep most people away from me. That seemed to keep most people from wanting to help me. It seemed to keep most people, you know, just this far away so that I could be alone in my isolation and feel safe. But he wasn't going to let that happen. He's a little angel. Don't tell him I said that now. but anyway, he put me in for 20 weeks, graciously. And I got through, I don't know, to about April. This I started in January, and I got through to April, and I went out with this guy. So my stories are either, so we were drinking, or so there was this guy. Well, this is both. All right, so I went out with this guy, and I really did only have one beer. That's probably the first time I ever told the truth about my drinking. And anyway, I met with this counselor. His name's Dennis, for a halfway appointment, and he wanted me to pee test. And he's like, "So, just to let you know, it picks up metabolites for the last 5 days." And he had to, I don't know how he knew, right? But he just knew. And I was like, "Oh." And so he said, if you self-report, you know, we don't have to do any, we can just rewrite your treatment plan and keep you in here, and it's fine, well, and good. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I signed up for 26 more weeks. I still go to that place today, by the way. I signed up for 26 more weeks. I still didn't have a problem. I was still angry, and it was just one beer, despite the rules being you're not supposed to drink at all. Well, that got me going. And since I got caught with one, I figured I might as well just keep drinking right on through treatment. Okay, I'll show them. So I did. I kept on drinking. And he never really caught me again, but I got my license back. I don't know if any of you have had DUIs. Maybe one of you has in this room. Anyway, they take... I love this place. They take your license away, and if you don't complete treatment, they report you, and then they can take it away again, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I decide, since I get my license back, to give him the middle finger, and I'm just going to go along and live my life. Thank you very much. And so I did that, And I was at a work conference in Phoenix, Arizona, and I got a phone call, and it was like, if you don't come back, we're going to report you, and they're going to take your license away. And I was like, oh, hellfire. So I went back. And I figured, by this time, it's about May, June time frame, and I figured, well, if I have to be here, I might as well sit right on through here and do something with this time. And I'd been paying for it. It was $50 a week, whatever. So I actually started to pay attention. By about October, I'm a slow learner, by about October, 4 months, if you're not doing the math out there, I realized I had an anger problem. I met this guy in group, I met this guy in group, and he was one angry mofo. I mean, he was angry. And I liked him, you know? I was like, I like that, because I saw me in him. I identified with him, and I was like, God, I dig this guy. But not like that, just like I like the guy, right? That's another part of the story. So, I'm sure I'll get there someday. So anyway, oh, you know that guy. No, she just knows him because we're, anyway, we've all known each other a long time. All right, it's not like that. I decided I had an anger problem. I figured it out. I was like, oh, I'm angry. That's my problem. Yes. And so, I got anger and addiction in the same sentence, and I was like, I have an anger addiction. And so finally, like, this little piece of light came through, and I was, like, free to admit that I had some form of addiction. Because really, at the end of the day, all of us do, even if people don't qualify to sit in here. People are addicted to work and shopping and their thinking and all kinds of stuff. So, anyway, my problem's really simple. It's alcohol. No, it's not, but that's another story. Okay, moving on. Let's not be technical. Sometimes I'm like, okay. So November, I go to the Cowboys-Packers game, and I had 3 beers and was pissed because, you know how they shut the beer sales down before the end of the game. It's really obnoxious. So I was pissed because I could only have 3, and then I had to deal with my boyfriend at the time who, whatever. So, who was not that guy yet.
Oh.
He comes later. So I had to deal with my boyfriend at the time, and we had an epic argument, which was typical of my relationships. There was always some sort of drama and fighting involved. And then what happened? I don't even know. I came back, and it was New Year's Eve, and I was out with that boyfriend and his best friend, and I have no idea what happened other than, like, after the third drink, I was out, blacked out, done. And I woke up the next morning. I remember a lot of throwing up. At this point in my drinking, that was normal. Earlier it wasn't, but, you know, by this point it was. And so I did that. That was great. And I got up the next morning, and I said, please tell me everything's going to be okay. And he read me the riot act. And I sat for 2 hours in my pity pot, and I was like, well, what am I going to do? And I had this belief, you know, I'd been doing all this personal growth stuff, like Jack Canfield, Success Principles, and all this sales, Brian Tracy, and whatever. So I'd done all this stuff. And I was like, well, I have this belief that however you spend the first day of the year is how you're going to spend the rest of the year. So I'm going to go out and set some goals. And so that's what I did. I went out and set some goals. Sobriety was not on there, mind you. But my last drink was 12/31/2007. Thursday night, January 3rd, 2008, I went to my group, and I said, is there an AA meeting tonight? An angry guy said, yeah, you want to go? And I said, yeah. He said, I'll take you. I said, great. So I'm friends with angry guy today, so bless his heart. He's. I'll talk about him in a minute. Because my sobriety wouldn't be the same without him. But anyway, I went to the greenhouse. That's where I got sober. And I sat in the front, kind of like how Mike is sitting here today. And there's a sign in the back of the room, and it said, you're not alone anymore. And I cried through that meeting. Because for the first time in my life, I believed that. I had spent so long running and so long fighting and so long defending and pushing people away that when I sat on that sofa and read that sign and heard you people speak and I heard your stories, I knew that I wasn't alone anymore. And I haven't been alone since that day. You know, first it was people, and then it was God, and now it's all of it. You know, now God's people and people are God, and it's crazy, and it's a great ride. And so I picked up a white chip that night. I went to a meeting, to the women's meeting there that they have on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m., just shameless plug for the women's meeting. And I said to this lady, I knew how this AA thing worked, right? Because I'd seen all these people come in and out and get sober, this treatment program, and I said to this woman, hey, how do I get a sponsor? And she's like, oh, just listen, and, you know, if you like somebody, just ask them. And this girl walks in, and I was like, ooh, her, in my head, I'm like, ooh, her. And the lady next to me, her name's Taz. Taz said, oh, her. And so after the meeting, I asked this young girl to sponsor me, and she said that she would, and we started to meet right away. And to make a long story short, the old boyfriend and I broke up 6 weeks later. I started dating the new guy. Let's all be shocked. And shocking. And moved out of that guy's house and whatever. Anyway, so the one guy, his name's Jimmy. Jimmy taught me AA out of the big book. He was really harsh, really tough, really when I would say some stupid things. Because, you know, when you're dating somebody and you're an alcoholic, you spend 24/7 with them. Hello, people. Don't do that. It's not healthy. But it was helpful. Because he would catch my nonsense and correct me on it. And my sponsor, she taught me how to love. My sponsor decided several years into her own sobriety that she didn't need this program. And so she left, and she's not sober today. And I spent some time with her. I went to see her last week. And I left early because the environment was not pretty. And so I'm going to tell you, fortunately, by the grace of God, I've only picked up one white chip to date. So I don't have the experience of going out and coming back in, right? But I can tell you from my perspective, from the person who taught me how to be loving and kind and gracious, who taught me how to respect myself, who taught me what it was like to have true friendship and a true bond, I can tell you, you go back out there, and that's gone. She's not the same person she was. I started losing people in sobriety very, very, very early. People started dying. A guy some of us went to high school with died. Two of them, actually. That was my second year. But a whole bunch of people died my first. So this disease kills people. I'm sure a lot of you know other people who've died. It's not a joke. You know, and we have a lot of fun in here. God, AA is awesome, and being sober is fantastic. But at the end of the day, I take my sobriety, my program, very, very, very seriously. I just try not to take myself seriously because I'm a racket. But anyway, I learned how to do all these things. You know, I, to the best of my ability, I did the steps. To the best of my ability, I followed instruction. I did, you know, date as a newcomer, and then the next year I did the cardinal sin and I dated a newcomer. I've been single 20 months now, people. I highly recommend it. If you haven't done it yet and you have the opportunity, go for it, because it's really well worth it. But anyway, just saying, it's a good idea. If you're new, stay out of relationships, okay? All right, at least your first year, maybe your first two, possibly three. take it from me. My first two and only boyfriends in sobriety both went back out. Jimmy, the guy who taught me lots of stuff, had a whole head full of AA, but he went back out. I don't even know, I can't even say. He's back, though. He's sober today, living life as a functional, wonderful human being who's a great friend to me, who really does talk sense into me when I need it, and I appreciate that. I trust him today with certain things. The other one went back out, is still out, whatever. I saw him. He seems to be doing relatively okay, but really, why live in mediocrity when you can have greatness if you work this program? You know, like, we have a choice, right? We can have okay lives, or we can have fucking rad lives. And if you want the rad program, get a sponsor who's worked these steps, who has a sponsor, and do this. Because this is the deal right here. You know, what my first sponsor taught me was that this is not a program for people who want it, and it's not a program for people who need it. It's a program for people who do it. It's that simple. And if you do the deal, you get the deal. And this thing works, man. It's for real. Oh, my God. Life is so amazing today. It's great. It's really, really great. And it's great because it's internally great. I am more broke than I have ever been. Okay? So it's not external. Like, I'm not swimming in money. Nobody won the lottery. All right? I'm still single, so a lot of us come in and think we need a relationship and blah, blah, blah. And I got to tell you, boy's not going to fix it. Ladies, the men won't fix it. And gentlemen, the ladies aren't going to fix it either. So you got to get right with God. And I'm going to tell you what, it's well worth it. So there was that. And I live with my mama. I'm 35, people. I live with my 75-year-old mama. But I'm going to tell you, it's a good thing I do, because my mom, this is a gift of sobriety. Like, I get to be present for people. I get to show up. So my mom passes out. She like, right on the sink, right? And so the first words out of my mouth when I pull her back from the sink and she's pea green and like, literally, was, oh, fuck me. Because, like, what am I going to do about this, right? I laid my hands on her. I said a prayer. My mom, she came, she like, she, you know, she can't, that's what happened. She came back to us, spent 5 days in the hospital. Nobody could find out what was wrong with her. So then she did it again. She passed out a couple of weeks ago. But I was home again for that. And so this woman who's given her life, her heart and soul for me, I get to repay. So, you know, my life on the outside looks so bad because I used to own a business and I owned a home and, like, I was really successful. And now I'm just this hot mess on the outside, right? Like, I don't know what's going on in the physical world, but spiritually I'm good. Like, I'm good. And so I can tell you, you know, I don't know what the heck's going on with the sobriety thing. I just keep working it, and things keep getting better, and I keep getting better, and new opportunities keep showing up, and I get to make a difference in people's lives today. And before, you know, I was making a difference before, but it was in the negative. I was subtracting from people's lives. I was taking from them. I was causing problems for others. And then I got sober, and that was, like, a really weird period and phase. And now I'm able to give back. I have something to offer today, and I actually have self-esteem and a conscience and all these wonderful things that I really believed I had before, but I really didn't. And now I'm like, oh, I'm even, like, I'm going to be conceited for a minute, but I'm even better than I thought I was, you know? And I don't mean that in, like, I say that humbly. Like, it's by the grace of God. It's not all I did was follow some suggestions. You know, I just did what people told me to do, and I listened, and I was willing to look in the mirror and be like, I'm responsible. I'm the one at the root of all of this. I'm the one causing these problems. I'm the one making the choices. What did I read in here? I wrote, this is my big book. I don't actually read it this much. I just ripped it apart because I thought it would be good for demonstration. Just kidding. I read the dang thing. And I wrote in some meeting, I was a frequent journaler, and I still am, and it says, it is always my choice. And I remember one of my friends calling me, telling me she wanted to drink, and she's like, I can't drink. I'm like, oh, baby, you can drink. You have a choice. You just don't want to pay the consequences. And she's like, you're right. And I don't know what it is about alcoholics recognizing, like, we have a choice. You don't have to stay sober. You don't have to get sober, right? You get to choose to do it every day. So it's not like, oh, I have to work these frickin' steps. It's like, oh my God, if this is all I have to do to have a completely new way of life, yes. And this older woman in the program said, this program is a bridge back to life, a life I never dreamed possible. And, you know, I'm in that kind of weird period. I've been sober coming up on 4 years, and my life is taking some crazy turns, and it takes a while to turn the Titanic, right? And I was a Titanic mess. And so I'm right on the verge of things really shifting and changing for me, but I laid a lot of foundation. And if there's a word of encouragement I could offer to you, it would be to work your program harder than anything else you did. Because somebody once said, if I put half as much effort into working this program as I did into drinking, my life would be totally amazing. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. I'm like, good call. And so, you know, I don't know what I do right, other than I don't drink and I follow some suggestions and I call my sponsor every day and I don't know what whatever this thing says. But I got sober. And it's such a gift. Because I show up to this meeting tonight and I know easily, I don't know, 20 of you. And that's pretty cool. You know? And I shared yesterday in the meeting that there's real love here. There's compassion and there's kindness. And, you know, there's not a lot of that in the world. And all I have to do, I have 300 plus choices every single week in the city of Orlando where I can go and I can give and receive love in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's amazing to me, because this world is so thirsty and so hungry for what we have in these rooms. We have community and we have authenticity and we have a solution to, I would say, the world's problems. If everybody did the 12 steps and worked them properly, boy, we'd have a pretty darn fine place to live. You know what I'm saying? Thank you. Like that amen on the front row. Yeah. And I just can't say enough about this program. And I mentioned to Chris before the meeting that I would bring yoga into my story because that's part of my story. And in 2006, I found the practice of yoga. And never in my wildest dreams did I imagine I would teach. I'm a yoga teacher today. That's one of the things I do. But yoga and Alcoholics Anonymous have gone hand in hand. But since this isn't like a testimonial for yoga, I'm going to leave that one out. And we'll just go back to AA if y'all don't mind. If you want to talk about yoga, we can do that outside. But anyway, this program continues to give gifts to me. My alcoholic brother got sober. He's been sober like 25-something years. We reconnected, hadn't seen him in 20 years, reconnected and immediately felt a closeness. And I retrieved a part of my soul that I had lost when my father died. He reminded me so much of my dad. And we're exactly alike, and it's amazing. And so it restored that relationship. It's restored the relationship I have with my mother. It's restored. Being sober has allowed me to do the hard work it takes to really live in peace with my fellow man every day. I don't always live in peace in my head. I'd like to, maybe someday. If I stick around long enough and keep doing what I'm supposed to be doing, I'll also have a little more calmness. The Monkey Brigade up there likes to get going with the cymbals and the, you know, confetti and the streamers, and they like to have parades sometimes. I was having one on Thursday, but on Friday I had recovered from that. And so I know it's a miracle, it's a blessing to be among the finest people on the planet. And I think sometimes we don't even know how great we are, you know. And I get the perspective to sit here and look at all your faces. And I have to tell you, it's amazing. You guys inspire me. You know, the newcomer that comes in and says, man, I need help. It's like the most beautiful thing. We had a great guy in here yesterday who was talking about how much help he needed. And I started to cry. Like, what a great place that we have here. We're so blessed. I didn't know what gratitude was, and I didn't really know until this year, to be honest with you, what that really was. And now I'm really kind of starting to maybe understand a slight bit little of what gratitude looks like. But, you know, it is just, it's amazing. It's amazing to be part of something today. And I was never a part of anything before. I always wanted to be in charge, and I was better than everyone, and all of that madness. And so, it's an honor and a privilege to stand here and to look at you and to look at your faces every single day or every single time I come to a meeting. And I see people from Alcoholics Anonymous outside of these rooms all the time. And it's great because God really set me up to be super accountable, you know, because there's people everywhere. And I don't stay anonymous outside of AA. I'm really open about my sobriety. That helps me stay accountable as well. You know, some people work their programs differently and they like to be really quiet about it. And whatever, to each their own, man. Live and let live. To thine own self be true. Blah, blah, blah. Easy does it. I could go on. Let me read them down the line. But anyway, it's great. So I highly recommend sobriety. It's easy. It's simple. It just takes a little work, right? It's like in yoga we talk about the balance between effort and comfort, and the same thing starts to happen in sobriety. You learn the balance between effort and comfort, and life begins to start to flow. Along the flow, there are some waves and other badgers and things. But anyway, I'm done. God's done talking now. I hope that was God, because if it was me, boy, we're in trouble. Anyway, it's an honor and a privilege to be among you, and I thank every single one of you for the work that you do every day to stay sober. It's a miracle. It really is, and it's the most beautiful thing I have ever experienced, and I would never have thought that out of such disaster would have come such joy. And so there are some religious traditions that talk about, you know, there'll be mourning and then the rejoicing comes after that, and it does. It is absolutely darkest just before the dawn. And so if you're sitting out there and you're hopeless and you're feeling really shitty tonight, just know that you're in the right place. And if you keep coming back and you maybe reach out and let us in just a little bit, it can really get better. And and they tell me it gets better. And so I'm like, I'm so curious that I'm like, I'm going to stick around and I'm going to see what else happens. So anyway, thanks for listening to me babble tonight.